Well, Hattie Carraway's been part of my life for as long as I can remember. My father knew her during World War II, and I grew up with stories of the first woman who was elected to the United States Senate.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with Dr. Nancy Hendricks, singing the praises of the late Senator Hattie Carraway and transforming herself into Hattie, born February 1st, 1878, just one decade removed from the Civil War.
Oh, I was so afraid I was going to be late. That Senate vote ran on and on. All those speeches. Now, I know they call me Silent Hattie Carraway because I don't make all those long-winded speeches my colleagues are known for, but I do tend to agree with Mr. Mark Twain that at times it's better to remain silent and appear a fool than to speak up and remove all doubt. Let me just take a moment here to properly introduce myself. I am Hattie Wyatt Carraway, and that's Senator Carraway.
Actor, academic Nancy Hendricks, and a special appearance from the ghost of Silent Hattie Carraway on Arts and Letters. From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities.
I am thinking tonight of the Southland, of the home of my childhood days, where I roamed through the woods and the meadows, by the mill and the brook that played.
Today we'll be talking with Dr. Nancy Hendricks, author of Senator Hattie Carraway, An Arkansas Legacy, published by the History Press.
There a welcome awaits all the children who have wandered afar from home.
I knew that even though Senator Carraway was called Silent Hattie and was often marginalized, I knew that I wanted to sing her praises.
Arkansas, Arkansas, I salute thee from thy shelter no more I'll roam.
Senator Hattie Carraway, 1878 to 1950, widow, schoolteacher, and the first female U.S. senator. Welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Now, as you mentioned, I died in the year 1950, so it's a pleasure to be anywhere. But it's especially good to be able to talk to our listeners and share a little of America's story during the Great Depression of 1932, running all the way up to, well, past World War II in 1945. And I hope that by listening to my story, that someone without an elite education or any kind of big political connections could go off to the Senate and kind of be involved in a few things that benefit people to this very day. And maybe that might inspire them into public service. Because it's like I always say, if you don't have good people in public service, you don't have good people in public service.
Arkansas, Arkansas, I salute thee from thy shelter no more.
So, Nancy, tell us a little bit about the impetus for this book.
I did have the honor of working for Texas Governor Ann Richards, and after she left office, I was blessed to be able to come back to Arkansas, and through the good graces of the University of Arkansas Fayetteville, go Hogs, was able to recall the stories that my dad had talked about and try to make some sense of what was the same and what was different since Hattie's time. You know, back in the 1930s, I was called one of the most visible women in America for being the only woman in the Senate. Well, I don't mind telling you, there was one time when I wished I was a whole lot less visible. Now, I hope our listeners won't consider this indelicate, but you see, at that time, the restroom right off the Senate was labeled Senators Only, so of course that meant males only. Well, I had to leave the Senate and walk those long corridors of the Capitol, and now people know why I wore those comfortable shoes. and use the public facilities with tourists to the capital. Now, that was back then, and that was in the 30s, and, well, that sort of gave me a kind of an indication as to how important I was to the Senate, but I'm happy to say that women senators did get their own restroom in the year 1993. Now, I can only think that someone felt like this, oh, women in public service, that's just a passing fad and it'd be a waste of good plumbing. Now look what I've done. I've gone and gotten way ahead of myself. I had the honor to serve in the United States Senate as the very first woman elected to that august body from right here in Arkansas. I served the years 1932 to 1945, and the thing I believe I'm proudest of, even though I never forgot the people back home or my passion for education or the military, is that, well, I like to say I never came down with that dread disease that some politicians do after they're elected and go off to Washington. It's called Potomac fever, and it's a kind of amnesia where, well, they go off to the Capitol and they forget where they came from.
Let's talk about her personal journal. You drew on that some, and it's so interesting to read because she begins with talk about how the men were dressed.
When she began her journal, it was very late 1931, but it lasted through primarily 1932. The entries that she writes really do sound like those of the secretary of a small town women's club discussing who ate what and even what someone was wearing. Senator Lewis is dressed in a tan shirt with green stripes, green tie, low-cut vest, looks like linen, beige spats. His short sleeves are very long, cuff buttons of enamel, black ground with red flowers. Well, they're still discussing wildlife, and I'm getting very hungry. Think I shall introduce a bill for a regular lunch hour for all senators to be fired if they do not eat at that hour.
And then later, she writes these really thoughtful responses about policy.
Later on, she proved herself to be a quick study. By 1934, she was writing more about issues that would concern a perceptive legislature, such as this one from March of 1934. This journal continues to be neglected while we wrangle over patronage, St. Lawrence Waterway Treaty, Philippine independence, liberally interspersed with cries from Robinson of Indiana that the President of the U.S. is a murderer, with airmail contract cancellation being the wholesale murder of Army flyers. But of all the spectacles, the attitude of the Senate in regard to Senator Long's personal objections to Senator Moore was one of the most indefensible. The chance to justify personal spleen puts the Senate in no admirable light. Prior to going to the United States Senate, Hattie Carraway's only elected office was as the secretary of a small-town women's club. By 1934, she was writing more about issues that would concern a perceptive legislature. And here she was in the middle of the great events of the 20th century.
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to Nancy Hendricks talk about the first female U.S. Senator, Arkansan Hattie Carraway. Let's step back. How about we begin with Hattie's early life?
Well, let's start at the beginning and let's just kind of visit and get to know each other. I was born Hattie Wyatt in the year 1878, just one decade removed from that most uncivil war.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way.
Now, like most families in the South, we were a farm family, and like most Southern farm families, we grew cotton.
Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Now, there's two things about cotton. First of all, you can't eat cotton. And second of all, you are out in those cotton fields from sun up till sundown. Of course, being out in the cotton fields all day long, it gives you plenty of time to think. The thing you think mostly about is, how do I get out of this cotton field?
The rice fields are full and the garden corn and hay, with the fruits of the field bloom in winter months in May. 'Tis the land that I love.
I came upon an idea that was radical for its time. You see, we all went to this little one-room schoolhouse. The boys, if they were lucky, went to the eighth grade. The girls, if they were lucky, well, there was just no telling. But I had this idea that education was the way out, not just for me and my family, but for our state, for the entire South, for our nation after that terrible, devastating war. Well, now, back then, there wasn't enough money to put food on the table, much less a schooling for a girl. But I came up with a deal with a maiden aunt that if I was good and if I made good grades at that little one-room schoolhouse that we all went to, that she would pay to send me to college. College for a woman. I cannot begin to tell you what a radical idea that was, but I so longed to become a school teacher. And I'm proud to say I never lost my lifelong belief in the power of education.
While she was in the Senate, education was really important to her.
She never, ever forgot her passion for the transformative power of education, that education was the ticket out, and especially for women who did not have many educational opportunities then. She brought buildings to Arkansas college campuses. Many of them are still in existence today, and you can still find her name on the dedication stone, although you have, you know, go down into the basement, move the Coke machine to find it. She was able to bring 10 buildings to UCA in Conway. There are buildings on the campus of Arkansas State University.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life.
She went into office, there was one building and a cow barn, and she was able to bring 9 more buildings to Arkansas State, several of which are still in use today. And so off to college I went. Now, while I was there, I met another student named Thaddeus Horatius Caraway, and despite his distinguished name, Thad worked his way through school picking cotton, and we became friends and found that we had a lot of ideas in common, and we fell in love.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life.
We agreed to wait until after we graduated to marry, which we did. I became a school teacher, as I had so longed to do, and I was able to watch my husband climb the political ladder. In the year 1920, the first year that American women had the right to vote, I was able to vote for my own husband for United States Senate. Well, Thad won that election, and he was reelected and planned to run again in the year 1932. But you see, he died suddenly after surgery at St. Vincent's Hospital in Little Rock.
They call no date. I promised you I'd wait.
She knew what it was to be a widow. She knew what it was to have children. Now, at the point that Thad died, her sons were fairly well grown. They were teenagers and in their early 20s. But she could certainly empathize with women in the Depression whose husbands died or, in many cases, simply abandoned the family.
Because to tell you the truth, I'll be lonely. I don't mind being lonely.
Arkansas law called for a special election to fill Thad's empty Senate seat. And there was about a half dozen men chomping at the bit for that Senate seat, and, well, it was just assumed that if the governor was to endorse one over the other, that he would make a political enemy, and if the political powers that be was to go for one or the other, well, it would just make a big mess down the line, and someone would end up paying for it in terms of political patronage. And so I like to think, probably as respect for my late husband, they agreed to endorse me, his little widow, to sit in his Senate seat for the last few months of his term. So the political powers that be in Arkansas agreed to endorse Hattie for that Senate seat. She was not appointed. She was elected. It was a legal, official, special election for the state of Arkansas, the end of 1931, and she served out those very few last months of Thad's term. Now, I must tell you, I flat out needed the last few months of that senatorial salary. This was 1932, the depths of the Great Depression, and so I agreed to let them endorse me in that special election. But before that happened, the political powers that be threw out a challenge to the women of Arkansas. They said, if you want to see one of your own sitting in the Senate for the very first time elected to that high office in the land, you ladies have got to make this election happen. You've got to pay for it. You've got to staff the polling places. You've got to get out the vote. And it will not come as a surprise to anyone listening to this that the women of Arkansas did just that. And so I won that little special election as I was supposed to, and thus, technically, I became the first woman elected to the United States Senate. I went off to Washington, and I was set at the very last row of the Senate. Now, one thing about sitting in the back row of anything, whether it's the United States Senate or your church back home, is in that back row, you can see everything. And I made it a point to watch and to listen and to learn. And what I saw was, oh, my colleagues, some of them were asleep on their desk. Some of them didn't even bother to show up for an important vote. And this was the depths of the Great Depression. I cannot tell you all the need that there was in this country, in our own country. People were starving to death. They were losing their homes. There was floods on one side of the country and drought on another side. And here come a plague of locusts, like some sort of biblical judgment.
They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread?
There was so much need and so much to be done. And I watched my colleagues not paying much attention, and, well, I became enamored of a theory that perhaps a woman could run for office.
If the New Deal's raw for you, backcountry farmer, write yourself a letter to your Arkansas daughter. She don't talk much, but she gets things done. Silent Hattie Caraway, go ahead and run.
But I must tell you, I probably wouldn't have done anything about it until Huey Long showed up late to the Senate, but wearing a white linen suit and a purple shirt and a pink tie. And as I said, he was something of a colorful character, and they sat him, well, back next to me, as I believe was a kind of a punishment. But that's all right. We became friends, and one day I confided to him about my theory of a woman running for office. Well, Huey marches up to the front of the Senate and says, if Miss Caraway so chooses to run for her Senate seat, I, Huey P. Long, will go to Arkansas and campaign for her.
Go ahead and run, Silent Hattie Caraway, go ahead and run.
So, there was not much for me to do at that point but borrow the $20 from my filing fee and to go ahead and run.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's return to writer and actor Nancy Hendricks as she talks about Senator Hattie Caraway and her campaign through the back roads of Arkansas, with Huey Long. Let's talk a little bit about the election and Huey Long. It was written up in
Saturday Evening Post,
and it was pretty much documented.
It was an 8-page article with pictures in it by Herman Deutsch, who was a very well-known and respected journalist of the time. It was newsworthy because for Huey Long to work for the election of a woman running for the United States Senate, now that caught people's attention.
The campaign was grueling. You showed in your book the schedule. They were in town after town, day after day.
Huey was as good as his word. He came to Arkansas and we crisscrossed this state from one corner to the other. I cannot begin to tell you. Now, back in those days, there was no such things as interstate highways or automobile air conditioning. And it was so hot that sometimes when we would climb to the roof of that sound truck that Huey had installed with these microphones and loudspeakers, that our shoes would vulcanize to the roof of the truck. Now, Huey was nothing if not a very canny politician. And in my opinion, he may have felt that if Miss Carraway lost the election, it was a woman running for office. Of course she's going to lose, and it would not have reflected badly on Huey. If she won, imagine what people would think of him in terms of a kingmaker, or in this case, a queenmaker. But when the dust settled and the votes came in, I'm proud to say that I was elected with more votes than all the 6 men that ran against me put together.
Happy days are here again. The sky is above, are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again.
That's what I like to think of as becoming the first woman elected to the United States Senate, and from right here in Arkansas. Now, I know that the people listening are probably too polite to say so, but they're all probably thinking the same thing. Well, she wouldn't have won if it hadn't been for Huey Long. And do you know, I'd be the first to agree with that. But I like to think there was something else at play. You had mentioned a book written earlier about me by that nice young Nancy Hendricks. And in that book, the introduction was written by someone who followed me as a woman into the Senate. Her name was Blanche Lincoln, and she wrote about the basic fairness of the people of Arkansas. And that's what I like to think of.
You want to have a voice in the troubled land? Write to Hattie Carraway. She'll help if she can. She'll help if she can. She'll help if she can. Write to Hattie Carraway. She'll help if she can.
There was a saying in Arkansas at the time, write Senator Carraway, she will help you if she can. That actually came from the people, not from her or her campaign staff. And she did receive hundreds of letters. She was told that she received more letters every week than her predecessors did in a year, which I believe show very clearly the tireless efforts that she went into for the people back home, whom she never forgot.
When we say that she responded to so many people, the letters were not only informational, but heartbreaking.
She received letters that struck her heart from women who were wives and mothers. Also, the men of Arkansas took the opportunity to write to her, as this one also during the Great Depression. Dear Senator Carraway, I'm living at the present time in Craighead County. I'm a bricklayer by trade, and I've made my living as a bricklayer for some 32 years. I've been working near Jonesboro for about 18 years. I have a wife and 7 children. 3 of my children are sick in bed now. I could not pay rent in town, so I built a log cabin in the woods, but now I'm told that I'm not eligible for work relief because I live outside the city. All I want is a chance to work, and I have to have that to make a living for my family. I'll certainly be indebted to you if you can help me get some work.
What do you say when there's nothing to say? Do you fill the silence with a bunch of nonsense?
She was so busy and took such care of the people back home in Arkansas, and she has been so marginalized. When 1938 came around, I determined to run for re-election. Now, I did not have anyone to help me, as Huey was dead by then, but I did have a very formidable opponent that many of our listeners probably have heard of, John McClellan. He was a congressman back then, and later on he went along to be elected to the Senate, but I'm proud to say that I was re-elected in 1938, thus becoming the first woman to be re-elected to the United States Senate. Hooray, Arkansas! She had another abiding passion along with education, and that was for our military and our veterans. She had a great sense of responsibility for our veterans. She had lived through World War I. She saw what our doughboy veterans came back to, and quite frankly, she did not feel they came back to very much.
Down went the gunner, a bullet was his fate. Down went the gunner, and then the gunner's mate.
Well, I was determined our veterans were not going to come back to what they did after World War I, which was not very much of anything. And so I put on my comfortable shoes again and went and lobbied every one of those New Deal agencies that might have money. And they were called alphabet soup agencies for a reason. There was a RFC for Reconstruction Finance Company, and the WPA for the Works Progress Administration, and the PWA for Public Works Administration. So I don't care if it was the WPA or the PWA or, shoot, the ASPCA. I don't care anybody that had money, and I was determined to bring some back here to Arkansas. Hattie was able to lobby with what was then called the War Department for something that was called Army College Training Detachments. And this was not basic training. This was for our men and women in the services who fought bravely and served bravely overseas to come back stateside for additional training in things like aviation or communications. And she made sure that Arkansas was at the top of that list. And where did she plan to house them but on Arkansas college campuses?
Shout and praise the Lord and pass the ammunition and we'll all stay free.
I ran again in the year 1944. I was defeated by that young Bill Fulbright. But on my last day in the Senate, my colleagues, to a man, rose and gave me a standing ovation. That was unheralded in the Senate, and I like to think that maybe that was their way of saying, I didn't do too badly. President Franklin Roosevelt, before he died, appointed me to a Civil Service Appeals Board, and I was very happy there until I suffered a stroke and passed away in the year 1950. But I'm proud that I made arrangements that I would be brought back home where I could lie at peace among my friends and neighbors, because I was so proud that in all those years in the Senate, I never forgot the people back home who put me there. It's been a blessing for me to be able to portray Hattie, and I'm so hoping that people will go out and share the story of Hattie Carraway of Arkansas, the first woman elected to the United States Senate.
In so many ways, Silent Hattie isn't so silent.
And she's going to come here and say, thank you for saying that. I am not as silent as people attributed to me. You know, even now people ask me, now, Miss Carraway, really, what do you think is a woman's place? Well, I can honestly say, I believe a woman's place is in the House and in the Senate.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Thank you to musicians and songwriters Brian Nolan, Sisters of Harmony, Stephen Winter, David Ramirez, Amy Josephanna, and Willie Carlisle. A special thanks to Swinging Down the Lane's David Miller for his sage musical advice and for the use of songs from his extensive music library. Thanks to Mr. Chris Hickey, who recorded the show. Thank you to Mr. Adam Simon for the superlative sound engineering. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to writer, actor, and academic Nancy Hendricks, whose careful research and spot-on portrayal of Senator Hattie Carraway rescues her legacy from silence. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's be mindful of the words of Susan B. Anthony. I declare to you that woman must not depend on the protection of man, but must be taught to protect herself. And there, I take my stand.